Alrighty, so here we are in Luke 22. How do you react when someone catches you doing something wrong and your eyes meet? What happens inside your heart? And the dread, the embarrassment, the guilt can increase, especially if you had said, I will never do that. And you said it to that person and then they saw it doing it. Peter, my heart goes out to him. He's an apostle of Jesus Christ, and he had that very experience, but he experienced it with the Lord. He said that he would never do something, and then he did it. And then his eyes meet the eyes of the Lord. As you know, the Jews arrested Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. There's a lot in the Bible about gardens and our salvation. For example, man's life and man's sin and prophecy for saving us from that sin all began in the Garden of Eden. And it all ends in the Garden of Heaven. Revelation 22 paints heaven as being a garden-like paradise. And between those two events is the Garden of Gethsemane. Here they will arrest Jesus. Here the faith and promised loyalty of Peter will be tested. And here the suffering of Jesus begins. So let's look now at verses 47 and 48. And while he was still speaking, the words that we looked at this morning, behold, a multitude, and he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. But Jesus said to him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? This has to be the ultimate irony in the history of man. Betraying a friend with a kiss. Something that appears to be so loyal and true and honoring your friend. It made Judas look innocent, and well, this crowd, I don't know who they are with all these clubs and swords and stuff. I'm just here to honor you like I always do, Lord. However, it's interesting that Jesus knew that it was a kiss of betrayal. He even asked Judas if that's what he was doing, which should have alerted Judas to the fact that Jesus, oh yeah, that's right, he knows everything. As Judas had witnessed several times during the past 3.5 years. 49 to 51. When those around him saw what was going to happen, they said to him, Lord, shall we strike with the sword? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus answered and said, permit even this. And he touched his ear and healed him. Well, they had two swords, if you'll remember from this morning. So they're ready to use them. Lord, is this the time? Is this the time when we finally get to start fighting for you and your kingdom? And then we know from another account that it was Peter. Peter was the one who used a sword, and so he didn't wait for the command from the Lord. And he went ahead and took this action because he still did not understand the nature of the kingdom of heaven, nor did he understand what Jesus was doing and why he had to go through it. So, as I mentioned this morning, I think Peter was, he was full of passion and zeal for his Lord. And he wasn't just trying to poke Malchus, as the one we learn from the Gospel according to John. He was trying to cut his head off. He wasn't just trying to cut his ear. I've seen, like in the movie Passion of the Christ and other people, they kind of act like Peter just well, at this point, no, man, he took out that sword and he took a wild swing. And so Malchus ducked, and it says it cut off his right ear, so we know he leaned this way. He was wanting to kill the guy. He was serious. He wanted him dead. Peter was not playing around. It's hard for me to criticize Peter because any of the wrong that Peter does here that we're about to look at, because I know that I'm no better than Peter. To me, Peter is the David of the New Testament, and David is the Peter of the Old Testament. Both men were just full of exuberant zeal for the Lord. And they would do whatever it would take, and yet they could also sin in a big way. So, I mean, if Peter were here tonight, it would be hard for me to criticize him because I'm thinking, well, I don't know that I would do any better. In fact, I don't even know that I would be there in the first place. I think we should at least give Peter credit that he was there with the Lord. But I am a preacher and a teacher, so I think my job is to point out things in the text, and so that's what I want to do. Peter had been sleeping, we learned this morning, when he should have been praying. He was talking when he should have been listening. And he was bragging when he should have been humbling himself. And then look at Jesus in the midst of all this. He's surrendering while Peter is fighting. Of course, no one knew that night that while men hated and attacked Jesus, both the Jews and the Romans, Jesus was showing grace, rebuking Peter, which I think saved his life, because if Peter just kept going on, he would have been killed by those who came to arrest Jesus. He healed Malchus, and he's willingly going through this arrest and everything else that's going to follow it. So while men hated, Jesus loved and showed grace. We know, of course, that he could have used his divine power to retaliate against these people easily. Or he says in another gospel account that he could have called, he says this to Peter, that he could have called 12 legions of angels and the Lord would have delivered them. The Lord would have, the Father would have done it. Amazingly, Jesus told Peter to permit even this. You have to allow this to happen, Peter. Peter would not understand. I think even if the Lord explained it to him, Peter would not have understood at that point. He was too full of passion, too full of zeal. But later he would learn why Jesus had to do all this. 52 through 54. Then Jesus said to the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders who had come to him, "Have you come out as against a robber with swords and clubs? When I was with you daily in the temple, you did not try to seize me. But this is your hour and the power of darkness." Having arrested him, they led him and brought him into the high priest's house. But Peter followed at a distance. Jesus was not a robber, and they knew it. They had never seen him do anything even close to robbery. Why did they come with all these weapons? Well, they knew he was popular. Who knows what his disciples might do? Who knows what the crowds might do, although they're away from the crowds right now? Also, in my opinion, sometimes people do things because that's what they expect you to do things because that's what they would do if they were in your situation. So in other words, they came prepared to fight because if they were in the position of Jesus, that's what they would do is fight. That's just the way they thought. And obviously the chief priests, captains, and elders did think violently because they brought swords and clubs. And yet Jesus pointed out that they had not tried to arrest him at the temple. I mean, if he's teaching falsely, or if he's making himself out to be somebody whom he is not, They should have arrested him right there at the temple. But they didn't. So they did it in secret, just so they wouldn't upset the crowds. I think it also shows that they couldn't refute him. They had no good argument against any of his teachings, any of his works, or against the man himself. Therefore, in their minds, the only thing they could do was silence him by killing him. And of course, they had no idea how that was only going to make his whole movement just explode in growth. Now, he himself gave an explanation. He answered his own question about why they came out with swords and clubs. He says, it's because this is your hour and the power of darkness. Darkness does not need a logical reason to do what it does. And it certainly doesn't need a scriptural reason to do it. It just does what it wants to do. And if you oppose it, well, you better look out, because they're going to hurt you. So darkness uses anyone or anything at any moment to silence the light. And that's what we see going on here. With the arrest, they took Jesus to the house of the high priest. But notice who followed. There was Peter. Luke pointed out there was Peter. I mean, after all, Peter had promised to be loyal. Remember back in verse 33. Lord, I am ready to go with you both to prison and to death. So although he's just been rebuked by Jesus, he's still showing his loyalty. Lord, I'll go with you. And so he goes with him. Now here for me is the difficult part. 55 through 62. Now when they had kindled the fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, this man also was with him. But he denied him, saying, woman, I do not know him. And after a little while, another saw him and said, you also are of him. But Peter said, man, I am not. Then after about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, surely this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you are saying. Immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. Though he followed at a distance, Peter did follow the Lord. Where's everyone else in Israel? Peter was right there. And we also learn from another gospel account that John was there too. And then the first denial takes place. Okay, so yes, Peter had made a promise not to deny the Lord. But he was caught off guard. So for me, it's easy to have compassion on him. And I hope that people would have compassion on me. Okay, yes, I failed. You're right. I shouldn't have done that. Then the second denial takes place. And it still hasn't occurred to Peter what he has done. A whole hour goes by. Plenty of time for Peter to think about how the evening's been going, to think about when they were eating the Passover meal, how Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper, and about what the Lord had told Peter about denying him. Plenty of time's gone by. And yet Peter does it a third time. And what what Luke wrote there in verse 61 is just so simple and easy to understand. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then the memories came back. And it tore Peter up. He wept bitterly. He cried as hard as a man could cry. He knew what he had done. He knew that his denials were not in secret, but that Jesus had heard and seen everything. And Peter realized how badly he had let his friend down. Peter knew that the Lord had spoken the truth earlier in the night. And Peter felt the slicing edge of the Lord's words and stare just cutting his heart in half. And it was overwhelming to him. He couldn't handle it. The memory hurt badly. He now saw himself as less than loyal, and he realized that the Lord always spoke the truth, even if in Peter's mind it was just impossible for that to be the truth. So Peter went out of there embarrassed and ashamed. Guilt, I think, just ripped this man apart and completely broke him down as a man. He's completely broken down. How could he continue to face the Lord? How could he keep watching the trial, knowing that Jesus was not the only one who was on trial that night, but that Peter had been, and he was unaware of it, although he had been warned that he would be on trial. The temptation was coming. Jesus had said a couple of times, pray that you don't enter into temptation. And either he didn't do it or he didn't believe it or something. But I also believe this was the conversion. This began the conversion of a broken man. Peter now is beginning the painful process of completely emptying himself of himself. And he will be a completely different man after this. He wept bitterly. He had a broken heart. He knew the horrible thing that he had done to his Lord. But that's right where the Lord wanted Peter. I've always loved something that Isaiah 57 shows, and it's always just stood out in my mind because, you know, I want it to be me. And here's what it says in Isaiah 57:15. For thus says the High and Lofty One, who inhabits eternity, whose name is holy, I dwell in the high and lofty place, like heaven, of course, with him who has a contrite and humble heart, to revive the spirit of the humble and to revive the heart of the contrite ones. That was Peter. And hasn't that ever been you? You sinned, and you never thought you would do that, whatever the sin was, some particular sin. And maybe you've never read that before in Isaiah 57, but now you can see it. God is high and lofty. He is holy. Of course he dwells in heaven, but then he also dwells in the heart of a person whose heart is all broken up over a sin. Yes. Exactly right. Isn't that beautiful? How about King David when he wrote Psalm 51, where he came to the realization about what the Lord wants, because David had felt the horrible sting of guilt pierce his heart. And so he had prayed to the Lord in Psalm 51:17, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and a contrite heart. These, O God, you will not despise. It's our sin he despises. And when we despise our sin, Now we're where he wants us to be. So the Lord destroyed Peter's high value of himself. Because we're not supposed to be concentrating on ourselves, but like the focus of my sermon this morning was, focus on Christ. That's where you should be thinking, Peter. And of course, Peter thought that he was, but he himself was in the way. We're to die to ourselves and live to him, for him who died for us. So, as I said, Peter became a new man. You know, you finish reading Luke, then you read Luke's second volume, the book of Acts. And you read Acts chapter 1, and what do you see there? It's Peter who takes charge among the 120 disciples who have gathered together in Jerusalem to replace Judas as an apostle. It is Peter that Luke focuses in on Acts 2, when he boldly, publicly convicted the Jews of crucifying the Son of God. And he did it again to the Jews in chapter 3. In both chapters 4 and 5, he and John are arrested for the preaching that they're doing. And they're warned by the Jewish council that they needed to stop. That's in the first meeting in Acts 4. They keep doing it, so now you come to the next chapter, Acts chapter 5, and they won't quit preaching, so they're arrested again, and this time they're beaten. And Peter rejoices that he was beaten for the name of Jesus Christ. And finally, in Acts chapter 12, Peter's promise is fulfilled. He gets to go to prison for the Lord. Then when you open up and read John, you come to John chapter 21, and the Lord himself let Peter know, you're going to get to die for me just the way you wanted. John 21, 18 and 19. Most assuredly, I say to you, and he's speaking to Peter, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. Then John explained, for this he spoke, signifying by what death he, Peter, would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. And of course, history tells us that that's exactly what happened with Peter, and that they were going to crucify him. But he had a request that he wanted to be crucified upside down because he didn't feel like he was worthy enough to be crucified like his Lord. He was really a changed man because he was completely broken down, and he was overhauled, like overhauling an engine, just starting from everything new. So like I said, my heart goes out to Peter. He should not have denied Christ. I know that. And I'm not trying to excuse it or anything like that. But at the same time, I also ask myself, where was the rest of the world, especially Israel, during his trials? At least Peter was there. At least he was there in a situation to be tempted to do wrong. The rest of Israel was not. Peter often got himself in trouble, but it was only because of his zeal for the Lord. That's what it was all about. Just like King David. So I ask you, are we like Peter? Peter, you know, he didn't sin when he made a promise to be loyal to the Lord. It was just that he didn't know what was coming. He didn't know the difficult days that were coming, the difficult hours that were just coming shortly. And if I've become a Christian, and part of becoming a Christian is being baptized in water, isn't baptism a burial where my old self is being buried, and now when I come up out of the water, I'm being raised with Jesus to walk in newness of life? So right there, I've already proclaimed to the Lord, I'm dead to myself, and now I live to you. Have you sung the song, I'll Be a Friend of Jesus? I'm going to read it to you, and listen to these words. And if you'd like to follow along in our song books, it's 312. 312. So I'll read each verse and then I'll read the refrain, which of course happens after each verse. They tried my Lord and Master with no one to defend. Within the halls of Pilate, he stood without a friend. The world may turn against him. I'll love him to the end. And while on earth I'm living, my Lord shall have a friend. I'll do what he may bid me. I'll go where he may send. I'll try each flying moment to prove that I'm his friend. To all who need a Savior, my friend I recommend. Because he brought salvation is why I am his friend. Then the refrain, I'll be a friend of Jesus. My life for him I'll spend. I'll be a friend to Jesus until my years shall end. Now, that's not exactly what Peter said, but it's coming pretty close. And in fact, I didn't know Billy was going to lead song number 272. It almost said the same thing. And I didn't know what Phil was going to lead until, well, I send out suggestions to our song leaders. And this week, I think I both, for both Larry and Phil, I just said something emphasizing Jesus. And then I believe it was yesterday, Nora types it up for him and sends it to me by email. And his song's tonight. We're almost saying the same thing. What if the Lord's behind that? Is my point that we should not confess to the Lord our undying loyalty? No. I'm not saying that we've been wrong by singing these songs. The thing is, we need to confess, but be loyal and realize that Satan is going to tempt our loyalty. The Lord has turned, and he is looking at each of us. What does he see? Shall we pretend to be friends like Judas when he kissed him? Shall we fight for him like Peter tried to do? Or shall we surrender to the will of God like Jesus did? Do you need our prayers tonight to be a stronger Christian, to be loyal to Jesus under all circumstances? If so, please come forward right now and we'll pray for you.